Science Magazine of the Air presents another chapter from the National Hour.
Our subject for today,
atomic power as the servant of man.
Atomic energy as the savior of human life.
Atomic power in a world at peace.
This is Robert St. John in New York, waiting to begin a stirring documentary on the use of atomic energy in peacetime. And waiting, too, to call in from St. Louis, Dr. Arthur H. Compton, a leader among the American scientists who won a wartime race against our enemies, who solved the riddle of the vast energy locked in the atoms of uranium.
Washington reporting, and waiting to call in from Knoxville, Tennessee, Colonel Stafford L. Warren, the Army doctor who protected the life and health of workers on the atomic project, and who can tell us of the startling progress atomic energy promises in the field of medicine. This is Robert McCormick. We are ready and standing by.
Welcome, Tovarish Amerikanski, in the name of the Soviet, welcome.
Mr. Secretary, how is the flight over?
Can you give us an interview, Mr. Secretary, before you go to the embassy?
Just what do you expect to accomplish, Mr. Secretary?
Just a brief word, gentlemen. Naturally, we have great hopes for this meeting between the foreign spokesmen of the big three. We hope to establish a firmer basis for world peace. We hope also to reach an agreement. And this is the most important. An agreement on the future use and control of atomic power.
Such a scene took place in Moscow. Secretary of State Burns meeting with the foreign ministers of England and Russia. Of course, every American is interested in the international use of atomic power, a weapon so vast and so dreadful that its destructive force is actually beyond the imagination of the average man.
Hey, Mr. St. John.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Haven't you heard? There's a piece on me.
Yes, but... Oh, you're Mr. A.A. Guy.
Sure, that's me. Average American guy. And you remember what you told us?
Yes, we told you about the use of atomic energy as a weapon, as a bomb. We want to tell you about the peacetime use of atomic energy.
And now you're really cooking with uranium, Mr. St. John. Now look, we all know that the war is over, and we hope it's the last war. So now what I want to know is just how is this atomic energy stuff going to affect me? Now, I'm just an average American guy, see? Now, what's it going to do for me? What and when?
Well, the changes made in your life by the coming of the atomic age, Mr. Guy, probably will be so gradual that you won't even be fully aware of it. That is, of course, unless you get very sick, say in a year or two. Medicine probably will be the first to benefit from the new discoveries. Other benefits will come later.
Yeah, Mr. St. John, but listen. They tell me that the power in a handful of this atomic stuff is enough to raise the Empire State Building 500 feet in the air. They tell me that...
Yes, I know, Mr. Guy. Many, many predictions have been made about the possibilities of atomic energy in our daily lives. Let's look at a few of them. This way, Mr. Guy. Step right over here to Dream World number 3.
I can't find a thing wrong with that engine, Mr. Jones.
Well, now, I'll tell you, Mr. Sampson.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Jones. Hello?
Is this the U.S. Atomizer Company?
No, lady, it's the wrong number. This is the United States Atomic Power Service Station.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Dumb James. Middle of the atomic age or not, they still can't get the right number out of the phone book. Now, as I was saying, Mr. Jones, that engine of yours runs like a top.
But it doesn't, Mr. Sampson. On some of the steepest hills, I even have to go into second.
Well, you shouldn't have to do that. Not on atomic power. Let's see. How long since you had the tank filled?
Well, you gave me the large marble-sized fill-up just about 2 years ago.
2 years? Now, look, Mr. Jones. No, you can't expect a car to run forever, even on atomic power.
I know, Mr. Sampson, but when we went to Florida on the atomic skyjack last year, I laid the car up for 3 whole months.
Hey, Mr. Sampson.
Yeah, Mac? New York on the radio phone. The steamship people. I'm packing a refill for the Queen Mary. Billiard ball size, isn't it?
Holy smoke, Mac. How long is it going to take you to learn this business?
Well, I thought that...
I told you last week the Queen Mary gets a fresh atomic refill each round trip.
Oh.
For one round trip, an atomic lump the size of a walnut.
Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Sampson. I'll do better next time.
Look, Mac, give Mr. Jones' car a marble-sized refill.
Sure, Mr. Sampson. Yes, sir.
And don't forget to wipe the windshield. United States Atomic Power Service Station. Sampson speaking.
Sampson, this is Mullins, Atomic Railway. What's holding up our order?
You mean it isn't there, Mr. Mullins?
Certainly not. Why would I be calling you if it were?
Doggone that kid, I should have known better. You see, Mr. Mullins, between here and your roundhouse, there's a movie that's called Superman's Grandson.
Superman's Grandson? What's that got to do with my order? You're holding up 50 locomotives, 50 trains.
I know, Mr. Mullen, and I'm sorry. I sent the kid over with your order half an hour ago. Darn those movies. Darn that kid.
Anything I can do, sir?
No. Wait, yes, there is, Mac. Watch the store, man, will you?
Yes, sir.
I've got to run over to that catapult field with some atomic power for those rocket spaceships. If I hurry, they can take off for the moon on time.
Fantastic. Yes, fantastic when you hear it that way. But each of the things you've just heard has been publicly predicted by reputable scientists since atomic power burst upon the world. Now, before we sneer or laugh at these predictions, let's listen to a statement made by Dr. Arthur H. Compton. We will hear from Dr. Compton in person soon, but here is a statement he made on November 16th at a meeting of the American Philosophical Society and the National Academy of Science.
Peaceful applications of atomic energy will most profoundly affect our lives. What these important applications will be, however, is difficult to predict. It is just as difficult to predict as it would have been a century ago, just after Faraday laid the scientific basis for electrical engineering to say what effect electricity would have on the future.
Yes, every American wants to know now what effect, if any, atomic power will have on his daily life and when. Perhaps a clue to the answer was given December 6, 1945. We're in the grand ballroom of Manhattan's Waldorf Astoria, attending a panel discussion on atomic power before the National Association of Manufacturers.
Our panel discussion is about to start. Seated around the discussion table are such men as Dr. James B. Conant, president of Harvard, Dr. H.D. Smythe of Princeton, Dr. S.K. Allison, University of Chicago, Mr. William L. Lawrence, science writer for the New York Times, and noted scientist connected with many companies involved in... Dr. Conant is slowly moving toward...
We're going to attempt to gaze into a crystal ball, make some guesses about what may come. I'd like your opinion, gentlemen. What are the chances of getting an atomic power plant suitable for running an automobile or an airplane?
Well, the difficulty of that, Dr. Conant, is that the atomic elements now in use give off rays which are extremely dangerous to human beings. To use uranium-235 or plutonium effectively, the metals must be shielded by very heavy weights of iron or other substances which will stop the radioactive rays.
And such a power plant with its shielding... How much would it weigh?
I can answer that, sir. It would weigh a minimum of 50 tons. I think that rather effectively rules out atomic autos. Yes, and planes, too. At least until we learn a lot more than we know now.
But how about railroads, gentlemen? Are we to have atomic locomotives?
It is my opinion that an atomic locomotive would be of necessity so large that a train couldn't go through any of our present railway tunnels.
What about steamships?
Atomic power for steamships is a possibility for some time in the future. Such power plants, however, will not be run by ordinary steamship firemen. They will have to be run by trained men of science.
Well, gentlemen, one final question. How long do you think it would take before atomic power will be able to compete with power generated by coal at, say, $15 a ton?
I say at least a decade.
I say 25 years or longer.
And I'm more optimistic. I say as little as 5 years or maybe even less.
Mr. Lawrence of the New York Times, I see you have your hand up. As you know, Mr. Lawrence, some of our scientists have said that it would be possible, using atomic power, to heat a city the size of Seattle within 1 year. What do you say?
I think, Dr. Conant, that the answer is pretty much up to us as a nation. We must first decide when we need atomic power and when we want it. Then the time it takes to get it for peacetime use depends on how much time and effort we want to put on it and how much we're willing to pay for it. In other words, atomic power belongs to the nation. It's up to the nation to decide what to do with it and when.
And there you have it, seasoned, considered views by experts on what we citizens will get when the benefit of atomic power is made available to us and when we're likely to get it. For more specific views on the subject, we are privileged to hear from Dr. Arthur H. Compton, Chancellor of Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. Dr. Compton is a winner of the Nobel Prize in Physics. More important, he was outstanding in that little group of scientists who led the way during wartime in making the atomic bomb. He speaks to us today from station KSD in St. Louis. We'd all like to hear, Dr. Compton, your views on the use of atomic power in peacetime.
In the long run, it can hardly be questioned that it will be the peacetime applications rather than the military uses of atomic energy that will most profoundly affect our lives. At this moment, the great field that is obviously open to atomic energy is that of production of useful heat and power. We also see important, though limited, medical and industrial applications of radioactive materials artificially produced by atomic chain reactions. Perhaps more significant than either are the new vistas that will be opened up by scientific experiments that make use of the byproducts of atomic fission. Right now, we are using large amounts of atomic power for producing neutrons. For this purpose, our atomic power plants are much more efficient than the best electrical machines that we have been able to devise. The neutrons thus produced are used for transmuting certain chemical elements into others of especially valuable characteristics. Of these transmutation processes, the one now of greatest importance is that of uranium into plutonium, which is an essential component of our atomic bombs. But plutonium is also a concentrated source of available energy that can be of great value for peaceful purposes as well as for building weapons. Other transmuted elements, especially the radioactive ones, are likewise finding uses in medicine, in industry, and in many branches of science. We cannot yet see clearly how important these uses may become. We have not yet built an atomic power plant for generating electricity. This is merely because we have been engaged in winning a war and there has been no serious shortage of electric power. If there is need for a demonstration, we could, within a year, build an atomic power plant that would supply superheated steam for driving a turbine. Before, however, such plants could become economically competitors with existing practice, a number of years' development will be required. At present, we do not see any possibility for use of atomic power except in large units, weighing 50 tons or more. This is because of the need for heavy shields to protect from the deadly rays emitted by the atomic reactions. Nevertheless, in the fission of a pound of uranium costing only a few dollars, there is available as much energy as in the combustion of 1,000 tons of coal. This means that as a fuel for use in large power units, uranium should become of almost negligible cost. If it will lessen the cost of heat and power to our cities, atomic energy will be a stimulus to every industry. If it reduces the gloom of winter smoke, it will be a boon to us all. if it gives abundant power where industry and agriculture need it, but cannot now get it. Atomic energy will extend our economic frontiers. These are possibilities that lie immediately before us.
Thank you, Dr. Arthur H. Compton. We have seen that atomic energy has many possible benefits for mankind, and this is especially true in the field of medicine. But the so-called atomic metals can be extremely harmful to any living thing if incorrectly used. Indeed, this knowledge by our scientists was one spur to the frantic race to discover atomic secrets during wartime. Let's go back to December 10, 1941, just 3 days after Pearl Harbor. Two noted scientists are preparing a report for the government. The report is marked in red block letters, Top Secret.
The invisible fragments resulting from atomic fission are artificially radioactive. The radiations from such materials are akin to X-rays and have deadly effects.
Good. Now, right here, let me insert a sentence or so.
Certainly. Here are your notes.
Thank you. It should be possible to extract these fragments and use them like a particularly vicious poison gas. There is at present no known large-scale defense against such gas. A comparatively small amount could cover a large area and wipe out all human life.
From atomic fission, a deadly and vicious poison. But our own scientists and doctors, working with their British and Canadian colleagues, developed the means to counteract such an inhuman gas. The doctors knew that the time was short and the stakes were high. Early in the beginning of the Manhattan Engineer District, the secret atomic bomb project, Dr. S.L. Warren, the famous radiologist, was called from the University of Rochester to the War Department. They made Dr. Warren a colonel. But even as Colonel Warren, he could never forget that he was a man of pure science, a doctor. Some of Colonel Warren's more military colleagues still chuckle over those early days when he first donned his uniform. But there wasn't much laughter in those early days of medical investigation into the byproducts of atomic fission. Here, for once, was full justification for that term in deadly earnest.
Doubtless you gentlemen wonder why I have called this meeting.
Yes, Dr. Warren. Colonel Warren.
My instructions will be brief.
What's it all about, Colonel?
I want you to go back to your laboratories and discover all the known effects of artificial radiation on human beings. Experiment with all the usual laboratory animals and birds, and if necessary, with humans.
But what is the problem, Doctor?
We want to know how to protect large numbers of workers from exposure to atomic rays. Each of you will, of course, be assigned certain phases.
What I mean is, Colonel, what's all this for?
I'm sorry, I'm not permitted to tell you. I can only say that the work is of vital importance to the safety of our nation.
As hot as that, eh?
Furthermore, this work has to be accomplished immediately. We have a 10-year job ahead of us. We are asked to accomplish, we must accomplish, that 10-year job in 2 years or less.
As we all now know, the job was accomplished and with highest honor. Many medical discoveries were made. Discoveries which may well bring about startling changes in the theory and in the practice of medicine. For instance, let's journey 1, 2, 3 years ahead in the field of medical speculation. We find ourselves in a doctor's office.
Doctor, is it cancer?
Well, too early to say yet. Certainly looks like a malignant growth.
I can face it if it is, Doctor. But our income isn't big, and radium treatments are so expensive.
We won't use radium, Mrs. Dayton. In fact, we can almost say that radium is old hat. Here, I want you to wear this.
Why, Doctor, this is... It's only a bracelet. A chain with a metal disc.
That's your medicine, Mrs. Dayton. Wear it for 2 weeks, then come back.
But, Doctor, what is it? Witchcraft? A voodoo charm?
No, indeed, Mrs. Dayton. You see, in our atomic energy plants, it is now possible to make almost any common element radioactive. We can control the strength and duration of that radioactivity. Now, I have given you what amounts to a 14-day radium or X-ray treatment.
Well,
Now, don't you worry about the cost, Mrs. Dayton. That radioactive disc you're wearing, well, it costs less to make that disc than the price of a good dinner.
Yes, that is a medical possibility. Possibility, mind you, for the future. But every doctor familiar with the subject will tell you that the achievement of atomic fission has opened unlimited frontiers of research, entirely new worlds in the field of medical aid to mankind.
Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. Probably no one is better equipped to tell us about medicine in the atomic age than Colonel S.L. Warren himself. Colonel Warren is head of the medical department of the Manhattan Engineer Project and is one of the outstanding authorities in the field of radiology. Right now, he's in Knoxville, Tennessee, and Colonel Warren is wearing, I might add, the Distinguished Service Medal for his work with the Manhattan Project. Now, Colonel Warren, will our work on atomic fission really have much of an effect on our medical work?
I think it will have a tremendous effect. But I want everyone to understand that what I say is purely speculative. Great possibilities for medical and other research are now in view on things which we could never do before, but they are only possibilities.
Well, what are some of these possibilities?
They're all based on what we call the radioactive isotopes. These isotopes are a byproduct of our atom work in quantities far beyond what could have been made by cyclotrons before the war. They make it possible to do a great many things we haven't been able to do before, and they will make it possible for us to do more of some things that we have done before. We had a few radioactive substances before the war, but they were very expensive and hard to make. With the processes we have now, we can make a great many different atoms radioactive, in large amounts, too, which will widen our research possibilities.
Well, now, to be specific, will they be useful in working on polio, for example?
Well, they may be, although that's a very tough problem. For instance, we might cultivate some polio virus in a hen's egg. That's the customary method of growing viruses. We would inject into the egg some radioactive carbon, so that the virus growing in the membranes of the egg will itself contain some radioactive carbon. Then the virus could be inoculated into animals. We would follow the course of the virus by means of the Geiger-Müller counter technique. Using this counter, we might be able to trace the course of the virus through the body. And perhaps, just perhaps, by analyzing blood and tissue samples taken from the parts of the body where the virus concentrates, we could find out a lot about just how it gets around in the tissues, how it injures tissues, what chemical changes occur, and so on. That does not mean we have a cure for polio now, nor am I predicting we'll find a cure. I'm just saying that by means of the isotopes, we should learn a lot more about the nature of this disease by the use of this method.
Well, what about the cancer? Will it help there?
It may. We can't tell where just yet, but there are many possibilities. From a lot of work along this and similar lines, probably taking years of research, we might possibly deduce what makes a cancer grow and why it behaves as it does.
Well, how about the treatment of cancer?
Radioactive isotopes have some promise of giving us better cancer treatment procedures. When we make a substance radioactive, it stays that way only a certain length of time. And the time it does stay radioactive depends upon what the substance is. Anyhow, suppose we take a certain kind of cancer. After a lot of work by a lot of men, we might find some substance which would lodge in that particular kind of cancer and nowhere else. This would be an ideal situation, and is one that a great many researchers are looking for. Then we try to make this substance radioactive by synthesizing radioactive elements into it. We pick elements which would stay radioactive only as long as we wanted the treatment to last. Then we put the substance into the bloodstream. It would get as far as the cancer and stay there, and nowhere else, giving off its radiations directly into the cancer cells. If this works, it would be much more effective and practical than the present use of radium needles.
Well, would this thin line of research carry through to other ailments?
I think that almost every ailment can be studied by these techniques in ways never possible before and with great profit to humanity.
Well, what do you think our chances are?
Well, if we could marshal our scientific strength for the study of these problems in much the same way as we did to make the bomb, we could literally accomplish miracles in a relatively few years in advancing medical knowledge.
The peacetime use of atomic power has been our subject, and this is what we learned.
Atomic power for industrial use will bring about many changes in factory construction and the heating of cities, in lowered costs for many products. But these changes will be gradual. They are still in the future. As yet, there is no possibility of atomic automobiles, atomic planes, atomic trains, though these may come someday when science learns more about the atom. Atomic fission has opened wide new prospects in medical research. It might well revolutionize the teaching of medicine in our colleges by giving us accurate experiments in finding the cause of disease and in determining the cure for disease. Atomic power will be an ever-growing influence in our lives. We must learn to use it willingly, widely, and wisely. Atomic power will bring many changes into our lives. It will change science and industry, and will at some time affect our everyday living. Man's discovery of the atom and his releasing of its energies must lead us on the road of reconstruction and peace. This program was brought to you by your Science Magazine of the Air. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.